it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome in Rose City to Soccer Made in Portland. I'm Ryan Clark, joined by Chris Reifer. Some big news to start out the show today. Obviously, those who find themselves on the Twitterverse or elsewhere in the social media verse may be aware that I will no longer be covering the Portland Timbers and Thorns full time for the Oregonian, moving to the Oregon Ducks beat effective immediately. But some exciting news to share on air this morning is that the Soccer Made in Portland podcast, hosted by myself and Mr. Chris Reifer, will continue in perpetuity this season. Throughout 2024, we will continue to record podcasts as regularly as is possible. More often, obviously, when the season is rolling than currently, with the off season being what it is, in that there is not as much news, not as much to cover, no games, that whole thing. So very excited to have the podcast continuing, and to be able to have this venue for fans to look and analyze and look back at the weeks gone by and the games and the moves and the places to eat. I mean, everything that you care about with this podcast will continue. So I'm excited.
We got a whole new lease on life. I was all, you know, Pablo Escobar memes from Narcos, like the meme where he's like standing in the pool and sitting on the swing, and like I was all that kind of vibe for like a good like 6 or 8 days there, however long it was.
Yeah, Chris was sitting in a park. He had his microphone like held up to his face, but he just wasn't saying anything.
It wasn't plugged into anything. It was just like, yeah, it was a sad state of affairs for a little bit. But we got a whole new lease on life here, folks. Soccer Made in Portland continues.
We are alive.
This really is like the podcast that can't be killed. It has been through so many different iterations with so many different hosts. And like fate has come for it multiple times, but this sucker's got 9 lives, let me tell you.
Indeed. So we're very happy that the Oregonian is choosing to keep us rolling on this pod. And obviously, you know, despite the fact that I am moving on and I'm not going to be the day-to-day beat writer for us at the Oregonian covering these two teams, I'm going to continue to watch them regularly, you know, keep up with essentially every game. And you know, the news is going to be on my timelines on all the social medias forever.
Still tweeting the news this morning, even.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still tweeting, so you know, there's.
I almost gave you like a can't quit you meme after you tweeted that. That would have been it was in the consideration, but it was like 5:30 in the morning, and I needed to go for a run.
Yeah, I've been converted into a sicko, unfortunately, and there's no helping that, right, as you are well aware.
There's no cure for being a sicko.
So a lot to cover, obviously, this week on this episode of the podcast, as we sort of check in here in the offseason. Obviously, the leading story being that the Portland Thorns were sold this week to the Bethal family, NWSL record $63 million total for the transaction. Big day, obviously, for a lot of people in the soccer community, many of whom I've seen on social media and elsewhere are now renewing or getting back on their season tickets as a result of the sale. Obviously, there were people calling for Merritt Paulson and Peregrine Sports to sell this team and continue to call for them to sell the Timbers as well. But, you know, the Thorns are sold. They're sold to a new ownership group led by Lisa Bethal Mirage and her brother, and their whole family, who, you know, who bring a fresh face and sort of a new direction in the hopes of the fans of this team. You know, they come at an important time, not only on the field and that there's a lot to do this off season for the Thorns, but just in terms of rebuilding trust with the community and, you know, making right the very public and serious mistakes that the previous ownership made, and continuing to grow this team in a way that I think that Thorns fans expect, that Thorns players expect, to be one of the leading women's sports teams in the world, which they have been. Look, I mean, everything that has happened to this point has put the Thorns in a very strong position when it comes to, you know, their global recognition, their importance and success in NWSL. And so now it's on the Bethals to sort of build on that. Some of the details that came out of the sale, obviously that $63 million number is big. We don't know exactly how that breaks down in terms of how much the previous ownership gets versus what counts toward future investment. The Bethals have committed to building a new training facility in the next couple of years with the goal of it opening by 2025. Until then, the Thorns will have the option to continue to train at Providence Park. It's not 100% whether they're going to do that yet. That's up to new ownership and the players and everybody on their staff. But Soccer Ops has immediately transitioned already to the Bethals, and the business operations are going to be handled, at least in the interim, by Peregrine while the Bethals put together their front office. So a lot of other details to get into, but just first blush, initial thoughts, reading all those details. Chris, what's your reaction to this big day?
So my first reaction is that I'm really, really, really happy for the people who are an important part of the Thorns community who now feel that they can come back into it. That, I think, is the most important thing that has come out of this. There are a lot of people who are back, and they shouldn't have had to be gone in the first instance. I understand why they were, of course, since I'm not blaming them. They shouldn't have had to be gone in the first instance, and a lot of those folks are now back. And that's, I think, very good news, and I think it's an important part of healing for that community that can help get the club now into a place where everybody's pulling in the same direction, where there is sort of this unified front that frankly made the Thorns what it was in most of the first decade of their existence. So I think that is enormously good news for the Thorns. There is a pretty strong hint of a countervailing sadness for me. And we've talked about this before, but I mean, for me personally, at least, and I know some others feel this way as well. I can't speak for everybody, of course, but it was an important and significant fact that the Timbers and Thorns were two teams within the same club. So there is, I mean, it's expected. Of course, we've been expecting this for over a year, but it is expected, but nonetheless sad that the club has been broken up. So I think that emotion is still very much there. It's especially a little bit bitter because it's not like it happened because it turned out to be untenable or it didn't work to have those two teams in the same club. It happened because important people made big mistakes. I mean, it's just as simple as that. And that's still sad. I mean, like, you know, fans are still reasonably upset that you know, this thing that was important was broken up by, you know, no fault of their own. So, like, that emotion is in there as well. In terms of the details, I think as far as the logistics go, it sort of makes sense. It's not surprising that the Bethals, you know, set up a transitional mechanism to carry on the business operations. Of course, they need to continue carrying on those business operations. While they're building out their organization, that takes time, right? That's not something that you can just do during a closing period of a deal like this. That is something that just takes a matter of months for them to build it out. They need to do that. But it sounds like every indication is that they're going to do that, and that the plan is to do that, and that this is truly just a transitional moment where they're going to have some of those business operations be run by the Timbers effectively. while they build out the Thorns organization. But the intent is for the Thorns organization to be a standalone organization, which I think, given the questions about leadership on the Timbers side, is probably something that is welcome on balance among many fans. So that all makes sense. Soccer operations, you know, they are certainly in their hands, but I think we're going to have to wait and see what exactly that means. You know, you reported, I think, that the sort of expectation is that Karina LeBlanc will remain in her role. But I mean, anytime there's an ownership transition, that's a question, right? I mean, we talk about it all the time in sports, that if you're working for somebody who didn't hire you, your seat is always a little bit hotter than if you've got sort of the tie-in of being hired by the person you're working for. So I think we're going to have to see how that goes. In terms of the money, I mean, I know, like, I don't care isn't really the best take for somebody who hosts a podcast. Like, that's not like the most exciting thing, but pretty genuinely, I don't care. You know, I mean, when it comes down to it, there are more important issues for me to worry about and be concerned about than how much money is going into the pocket of somebody who already has hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, I just don't really care that much, to be frank. You know, what the money means, it's so hard to say. I mean, we know that these deals in the past, we saw it with the Chicago Red Stars. The Chicago Red Stars deal was initially announced as a $60 million deal. And then there was some digging into the numbers, and the actual purchase price was $35 million. And then the extra $25 million was sort of like guaranteed investment in the team. So, I mean, those numbers are always more complex when you get down into the meat than they're sort of presented in the press release. So, right. I mean, what to make of that $63 million number, I don't know, and I don't really care all that much, quite frankly. What's more important to me is that it seems like the Bethals are motivated and moving quickly to get the practice facility property secured and built and get that up and running. I hope they will explore possibilities for grass surfaces to train on in the interim. It sounds like they are at least planning on exploring that. And I don't know if there's a good workable solution or not. That's a level of detail that I just don't have visibility into. But, you know, I'm glad to hear that at least that consideration is being made. And in terms of the rest of the details, I think it makes sense. You know, there's been... every time you tweet about this, you get like one or two response from somebody who's like, "They're gonna move the team to Sacramento," which is just like,
yeah, that's not happening. I can tell you that, like, unequivocally, that the Thorns are not gonna move to Sacramento.
If the Bethals wanted to put an NWSL team in Sacramento, you know what they would have done?
They would have gotten expansion.
Yeah, in Sacramento, instead of like spending a whole bunch of more money to come by the Thorns and just to move them down to Sacramento. Like NWSL is expanding. There are expansion teams to be had if you got the money. And so, like, it would have been much easier for them to do that if they really wanted to be down in Sacramento.
And maybe they do that someday. I mean, we've seen Michelle Kong. She's invested in multiple teams, you know, across the globe. So, you know, that's speculative, obviously, but the Bethals are people who, you know, they bring a background of that sort of, you know, infrastructure type investment in the sports side, right? They are part owners in the Sacramento Kings. Obviously, their background is that their parents got started in the swimwear business, and then the children, Lisa being the primary owner of the Thorns, and then her brother Alex, they bought their parents out in 2006, private equity buyout, and have built out these sort of investment firms since then that have a whole lot of dollars going around, including investment in Golden One Center in Sacramento, the new arena that the Kings now play in.
I was actually down there a few weeks ago. The area around that arena is pretty nice.
Yeah, they built that area out in a way that, it's, you know, cool. That's it was like a $1 billion investment or something. And so their background is real estate. Their background is this type of investment. And so that type of thing is likely what they envision, you know, that type of investment in a training facility. Right. Is they have the expertise of sort of finding those locations and getting good deals and sort of building out things that, you know, have benefited sort of the communities that they've that they've gone into. Now, obviously, we're in the soccer community going to look at this with a critical eye, and you know, keep fans are always going to keep an eye out for people in ownership crossing their T's and dotting their I's on every business deal.
And I mean, it's an important position. It's a public position, and it's one where there's a level of scrutiny that's going to be just inherent in it.
Right. And so that is a big piece of it that's to come in the next couple of years. Obviously, the Thorns will continue to play at Providence Park. The details of their sort of sublet of that building to continue to play have not been released. We may find that out in the coming weeks when the Bethals are expected to have a press conference later this month. So we'll probably hear a lot more in the way of details about the future from them, get to sort of meet them and get to know them on a personal level. But yeah, I mean, this is obviously a huge moment for the team, for the players, and it's been an uneventful off season. While the rest of NWSL, there has been a lot of events happening, especially over there in New York and New Jersey, with Gotham. That's been an unbelievable off season. So, we can get into that next, but you know, the ownership piece is obviously just this seismic moment in the history of this club.
As an aside about the area around the arena in Sacramento, I was down there when Oregon was playing Washington in the Pac-12 championship game, and I wanted to watch the game. So after I finished work, because I was down there for work, I went to a bar to watch the game, and I went to a bar sort of in that district around the arena. And like, as I was, I just went to this place. I was, you know, enjoying some delicious truffle popcorn. Folks were very nice. The whole place was very nice. It was great. Nice experience. But it kept getting busier and busier as I was there. So I was like, at some point, because that game was weirdly early. It was at like 5 o'clock. And so at some point I was like, oh, there must be a Kings game tonight, because like the place is getting packed. And like that neighborhood was sort of bumping. And so like the game gets close to ending. I think I had to go somewhere else to meet some folks. So the game wasn't quite over, but I had to leave. And so I like walked out toward the arena being like, oh, I'm going to see all the people going in for the Kings game. It was not a Kings game. It was a Trans-Siberian Orchestra concert. And let me tell you, Sacramento turns up for the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. It was lit. It was wild.
I mean, who wouldn't? One of the great experiences in life is to see the Trans-Siberian Orchestra live.
Truly, but, truly. Yeah. And Sacramentans, I assume it's Sacramentans. I have no idea.
Sure.
Sacramentans are not about to let that moment pass them by. Like the way the rest of America is like popping off about the Eras tour, Sacramento, Trans-Siberian Mother Cluckin' Orchestra. That's it. Oh, that's it. So yeah, that was an aside. So as the Bethals come to Portland, where we're slightly less enthusiastic about the Trans-Siberian Orchestra in my experience, they got a big job to do. we've been talking about memes from various TV shows and movies over the course of this episode, and basically all episodes, that's like my love language, basically. Is memes. I mean, this is the meme from Community of like, you know, Donald Glover walking into the burning room with like somebody shot. Like that's kind of where the Thorns are at right now. Like there are a lot of things to do. There are a lot of fires to put out. Then they kind of all need to happen at once. So they got a big job. I, in some respects, I don't envy them. In some respects, you know, they're sort of being welcomed as liberators. So, there's hope for the future that they can tackle these things. But look, I mean, they've got an off season that they're coming into where many, if not now, most of the biggest free agents are off the board. Like Gotham's basically
signed all.
Yeah,
of them.
Yeah. I mean, they, like sucked up all that oxygen. Like that's and a few others have gone elsewhere, but that's basically off the board. There are still some free agents, including some that the Thorns can re-sign. Becky Sauerbrunn, I mean, Christine Sinclair, although that's a little bit of a foregone conclusion. And there's still...
Sinclair is not necessarily Sauerbrunn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sauerbrunn, not a foregone conclusion. Sinclair, I mean, that writing has been on the wall and her Instagram page. So is the Instagram page is not considered a wall, right? The wall was Facebook.
The wall was Facebook. I don't even know.
Taken the wall nomenclature from Facebook to Instagram?
I haven't heard the term wall with respect to grid. Facebook in a very long time.
That's true.
Profile. I don't use the app anymore.
Neither do I. Yeah. I was an OG. I was in back when like it was only for your college. It was a lot less creepy. it was a lot less weird at that point. Anyway, lots of digressions. But nonetheless, they've got an offseason that's stuck in the mud, and it's a really important offseason. I mean, unlike the last few when the Thorns could basically run it back and expect to be competitive at the top of the table, that ain't true anymore. Like, unambiguously, that ain't true. They got to make some moves. They got to make some deals to reinforce the roster to get it to a point where it's going to be competitive. You don't need to look far to see that there are other teams around NWSL that are arming up. San Diego is going to be really good again. Like, that's basically a fact. Barring a bunch of injuries or something like that, they're going to be competitive again. Gotham is stacked. Absolutely stacked. More talented front to back on the roster right now than the Thorns are. I think that is about as hot a take as my I don't care. Like that is a fact as well. And so there's a lot of work to be done. And here we're sitting in January and they've done bupkis. They've done nothing. So, you know, I mean, in some respects, I imagine that first meeting after the closing with Karina LeBlanc, I kind of hope it was short. And like the sum and substance of it was just like, go do things.
Yeah. Just like a quick high five, one quick woo.
Hey, hi, nice to meet Karina. You. Go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's going to be interesting these next few weeks. You wonder too how, and we talked about this before, how much the ownership transition hampered or impacted, you know, the ability even of someone like Karina or her front office to sort of make these type of moves. We don't know.
We don't know, but I mean, come on. They haven't done anything.
There must have had some effect
because like they haven't done anything.
Yeah, so far it's been solely subtraction, right? So Crystal Dunn obviously is part of that, you know, superhero group of Gotham players that have been signed. She's going to Gotham along with others, including Rose Lavelle from Lorraine,
Tierna Davidson,
Emily
Sonnet.
Emily Sonnet.
It's half of a really good starting 11.
Yeah, it's USWNTFC now, yeah. Right? Like, if the Thorns are like the Canada FC plus Sophia Smith plus Olivia Moultrie, you know, then
plus
you,
Sam
you
Coffey. Make an come on, man.
And Sam this Coffey.
Is, this is
I'm
this
just, is a, I was thinking this is national a, teams.
A Sam Coffey admiration podcast.
No question. It's also a Wayne Coffey admiration podcast. We love Wayne. Hope Wayne had a nice one of our loyal listeners. Yeah, I hope so too. He's a wonderful man. So yeah, I mean, look, it's a crucial point in the off season now, at a point where we talked before about the Thorns being at risk of being passed up, and you know, if the off season ended today, the Thorns have unequivocally been passed up.
I mean, they're not at risk of it anymore. Like it happened.
Yeah,
and now the question is whether they can pull off some sort of tortoise and hare kind of offseason.
Finish it strong to where they keep themselves in contention, and you know they have a ton of like amazing individual players coming back. This is not a situation where we're belittling what is left for the Thorns, right? What is left for the Thorns is very, very good, but you have to fill those holes and patch up the areas that need to like definitely be patched up, right? Especially if you don't retain other free agents like either Becky Sauerbrunn or Megan Klingenberg, right? That makes it even worse, because then you're talking about patching up areas that, you know, you thought you had sort of stalwarts in. We don't know necessarily at this point where those negotiations lie, whether they're more likely to come back or not, but those are obviously the first things you want to do. Then you want to add more. And then once all those things are taken care of, the real, as you've talked about, top priority is that Sophia Smith extension, right? Because then you don't want to be in a scenario where you lose her at the end of her contract for nothing. An extremely, extremely important presence in NWSL, one of the best players individually in the world. We've talked
age of what, 22, 23?
Yep, 22.
Got to keep players like that.
Yes.
Or get a lot of value for them.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, we've talked ad nauseum on the Sophia Smith extension thing, but the big focus right now for Karina LeBlanc and for the Bethals as they take over is to build out this roster in such a way that they can make it easier for them to contend in 2024.
And there's a related issue.
The NWSL is getting better all across the board.
No question. And there's a related issue here that we've referenced, but I think is worth talking about, which is the effect that not having a training facility has on their ability to attract talent. I mean, this isn't a matter of speculation anymore. Lindsay Horan just up and said it. That was a factor, at least, in her decision not to come back to Portland. Lindsay Horan is an important player. We weren't the only ones watching that interview. She's an influential player, obviously. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who feel the same way. And that matters not only in terms of retaining players like, I don't know, Becky Sauerbrunn, but, and in the future, Sophia Smith, and maybe in the future, Sam Coffey. That'll be a very sad episode. if you know, the subject of much of our Thorns appreciation leaves. You know, I mean, those are all things that top players like that are going to consider when they decide where to sign, because those are all players who are going to have attractive contract offers in many other locations, right? And so a lot of times their decisions, contract details are important, obviously, but in many times those decisions come down to other factors like that, like what the training situation is like. Do I feel like I have a chance to be successful there? What the living conditions are like. I mean, all of those things matter. And if the Thorns are still sitting here with no concrete plans, at least no training facility in place and no concrete plans for a training facility, I think it's going to be harder. And so I think one of the things that the Bethals are going to have to do as part of their effort to recruit talent to come to Portland is they're going to have to sell their vision for the club. And the more concrete and refined that vision is for the club, the more sellable it's going to be. So I think that's a big factor in terms of that success on the field. And I think success on the field in these next few years, you know, teams go through ups and downs, right? It is very rare, and frankly, it's very boring when this happens, that a team is just spectacular, like for decades and decades at a time. That's rare. Teams go through ups and downs, but this is an important couple of years for the Thorns, especially as the Bethals are establishing their ownership. All of the process of healing this community and building it out and starting to capitalize further on a lot of the economic opportunities that I very much believe are there for the Thorns, such that they really can grow the club to the point that I think it should be grown to. All of that is a lot easier if you're good on the field, if you're competitive. It's a lot harder to attract those new partners at new levels if you've got a team that's missing the playoffs. It's a lot harder to get people excited again for obvious reasons. Even if you're doing a lot of other stuff right, if the team's not competitive on the field, it's tough to get folks back in the fold. And so I think it's important for the next couple of years in the short term that the Thorns be competitive. And that's just going to be hard because of the ways in which the club has not been built out over the course of the last few years. And of course, that's not the Bethals' fault. But it is the conditions that they sort of arrive in, and it's the challenge that they face, and so that's why I say I think they've got a challenging job. But they now have a whole group of folks behind them to help them do that job, and I think they should you know move quickly to really form a relationship with those folks to have everybody pulling in the same direction again, because I think that's the way it gets done.
For sure. And obviously fans will get to know the Bethals and the whole family that is sort of involved in this in the coming weeks and months as the transition happens. Obviously on this podcast, open invitation to them to come on and sort of introduce themselves to the soccer community. We would love to have them on in the future if possible. Same goes for everybody involved in both of the teams for PTFC, which now is still PTFC, but is in two separately owned pieces.
PT's FC.
Yes. One final note on the Thorns before we move on to Timber's discussion. Ricky Savecki, the Danish defender who the Thorns signed with, I think, like three or four games left in the regular season this year. We were wondering sort of what happened there in terms of either injury or absence from the team. She didn't make an appearance during the regular season or in the playoffs, and now she announced today that she is medically retiring from soccer at age 27 due to a heart condition. So obviously thoughts are with Ricky. Obviously that is just an unbelievably difficult thing for anybody to have to go through, and a scary thing to have to step away from a sport that's been your whole life. And so, you know, major thoughts with Ricky at this time. And so it's unfortunate that, you know, we didn't get to see her in a Thorns uniform, but that's secondary to the human aspect of her just making sure she stays healthy and happy in the future.
It is. And we've seen how things like this can be very, very scary in soccer. In particular, that's true in all sports, but we've seen it in soccer relatively recently. And so I'm glad that this was caught and that she's able to put her health over her career, even though I have tremendous empathy for the fact that she had to make that choice. It's hard. It's unfortunate for the Thorns. That's another hole, right? I mean, they clearly brought her in with how late they signed her last year. They clearly brought her in hoping that she was going to be able to be a contributor on the back line in 2024. And so for the Thorns, it is a hole that they're going to have to fill now, in terms of bringing in some new talent, referring back to our prior discussion, to do that. But I'm both really empathetic that she's in this position and has to walk away from a game, that she's played at a very high level for a very long time. But also just happy for her that she, was able to find this and get it sorted out before it turned into something worse.
Moving to the Timbers off season, last time we hosted this podcast, it was a similar type of story as what was going on with the Thorns, right? We were talking Bupkis at that time, but there's no longer Bupkis. There's
Kiss.
There is whatever. There is, sure. there's Kamal Miller.
There's Kamal Miller.
He's the headliner for it. He was traded from Inter Miami to Portland in exchange for a boatload of GAM.
A huge boat. This wasn't like an ocean liner worth. It was a
closer to a dinghy than a
either. I don't know. Like whatever's in between. Like a small yacht's worth of GAM.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably buy a small yacht for the amount of.
I'm sure you could. That would be. I think that would be a pretty low grade yacht.
$650,000. Yeah. Are you in yacht circles? Are you aware of the prices of these vessels?
They are tremendously expensive. I mean, at least what I would consider a yacht.
$650,000.
Yes. Have you seen some of these things?
Oh, I know the super yachts and stuff that like Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, and like Putin owns, but I feel and stuff like that. I mean, you know, it's not one of those yachts worth a GAM. It's like,
okay, what is a yacht? Okay, we'll find out.
From yeah, people. I mean, maybe, folks, maybe, help us out on Twitter. Like, what is the definition of a yacht? And is there like a price threshold when you go from being a mere boat to a yacht? I don't know.
Maybe Merritt knows. So moving on to the other moves that the Timbers
struck me as like a nautical guy.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I don't know either. But you know, I don't see him walking around in like boat shoes with like a captain's hat or anything like that. So
no, nothing like that yet. Trey Muse and James Pantemis are also coming to Portland, according to reporting from Tom Bogert. Obviously, that has not been made official yet in the way that the Kamal Miller move has, but those are two goalkeepers, one in Muse, who's younger, sort of like a back-end potential type of guy, and Pantemis has been in MLS, but struggled, obviously, with CF Montreal, and is more of a veteran presence. Tom noted in his reporting that the Timbers are not done yet at goalkeeper, so maybe there's another name out there that they see as more of their regular.
Yeah, I don't think they have a number one yet.
More solid starter. Yeah, those are guys that you know, people in MLS circles view as depth pieces, right? So
yeah, and you know, I mean, Muse is an interesting depth piece, right? 24 years old, he had a great season last year in the lower divisions with the Battery, if I'm remembering right, at Charleston. That's a good move. You want a guy like that, right? Who you think is at a good age and is leveling up. You want a guy like that in the club. So perfectly solid move. Pantemis is, I think, sort of a reclamation project, if you will. He was a guy who, in his age 24 season, Montreal saw as a potential future starter and has fallen off that level. Maybe this is a scouting play where the Timbers think they see something in him that they think they can tweak or develop to bring him back to that level of being a starter. No objection whatsoever to that, to taking swings like that. Sometimes those pan out, many times they don't, but that's fine. Like, it's good to take some swings like that, especially when you're doing it for, you know, off roster budget kind of numbers. And so, like, I think those kinds of moves are good. They're the kinds of moves that you want teams to be making. They're also not the kinds of moves that are going to reshape the roster, though. And so to the extent that we're talking about the task of the Timbers sort of getting the roster into a healthier spot to take them from a two-time non-playoff team in a league in which it's very easy to make the playoffs to something more competitive, those aren't the kinds of moves that you're going to be able to point to meaningfully and say, see, we're doing it. Those are just the kinds of moves that are good to do as depth pieces in the offseason. Now, the Kamal Miller move, that is more of a meaningful move, and it's one that I like quite a bit. I like him a lot. I think he's a really good, at least sort of stylistic fit with Zach McGraw in a back line. The question will be whether they play in a two or a three next year. I don't think we know that. Miguel Araujo is still on the roster. They seem to still have, I don't know if I would say high hopes, but some hopes about Araujo, even though he didn't meaningfully appear for the Timbers last year. What, three total appearances after joining in July?
And Dario Zuparic, who, you know, to my knowledge, requested a trade, but he's still on the roster and the trade hasn't happened.
Like,
so
that deal gets done, though, right? I mean,
you would with think bringing just in Miller, just given everything. Yeah.
Feels like that deal gets done.
Yeah, because Zuparic was the pairing with Zach McGraw prior to, and this, it unequivocally is the move for a top level center back, and you know, Kamal Miller, as you said, great fit next to Zach. He's left footed, he's rangy, he's athletic, he moves in ways that, you know, previous center backs that have been next to Zach just don't move like that. It's a different player.
The one problem is, like, help us, Justin Trudeau, when they're out on international duty. Because if that's your starting center back pairing and Canada is playing, you've lost your entire pairing. If you're playing in a two. If you're in a three, then that's a slightly numerically different story. So, you know, I mean, I think that is one question that the Timbers need to make sure that they have some reliable depth. If Zuparic is going to go, and it seems like they're just over-indexed financially at the position right now, so it still seems like that deal gets done. But assuming he goes, I think you need to bring in at least one other sort of, you know, MLS rotation level center back. Doesn't need to be a starter. Doesn't need to be somebody you're paying $500,000 to. But it needs to be somebody who you can give, you know, 5 to 7 starts to over the course of a year and not feel like your season's going into the tank.
Do you think that Eric Miller can serve as that, as sort of the break glass if necessary type of thing?
Maybe they're already breaking glass if necessary with him at fullback. And so, you know, I mean, and that's very much the thing in these international windows. If McGraw and Miller are gone, there's at least a non-trivial chance that Mosquera might be gone, right? And so, yeah, I mean, this is all just sort of a meandering discussion to point to the fact that they still have some depth moves to make on the back line. They might have their starters now, but they still have some depth moves that they need to make on the back line, kind of like they have made at goalkeeper. They need to make some of those.
Yeah, and it's undoubtedly, too, as we've talked about, a huge move to have a starter of the level of Kamal Miller, right? I think this is the biggest move that Ned has made since taking over, beyond sort of, you know, getting the Evander deal over the finish line.
Maybe
which
Antony.
You know, yeah, Antony was a big deal, too. We'll, you know, Antony is a guy that could make a big step up this year for the Timbers as well. Yep. So, you know, no discounting that by any means. But this is a BFD for Ned. So, yeah, that's kind of been the highlight of the offseason so far for the Timbers. And then the other things have been sort of silly season ridiculousness on social media. A lot of it surrounding Evander, where, you know, there has been interest from Flamengo. I know for a fact that they've made a bid for him, but it's been nowhere near, as Tom Bogert reported, what the Timbers want out of a guy that a year ago they invested $10 million in, just in terms of the transfer fee, right? If Flamengo's come in with $7.5 million as their first offer, I'm probably not even taking the second call if I'm Ned. But if the second call is double that, then maybe. Yeah, hey.
I mean, if they're gonna roll in here with a bag, you know, we're not gonna kick them out. Look, so a good buddy of mine runs every year a music festival in Pendleton, Oregon, the Jackalope Jamboree. It is a phenomenal time. So, because of that, I've been in the penumbra, I would say, of the music industry. And when you're booking a band, like the way like the industry works is that, like, if you like inquire to be like, hey, can we book you for next year? They'll never tell you, no, go to Hades, right? Like they're not going to tell you that. But like, bands a lot of times aren't interested, and it's usually just logistics, right? They're like, well, we're going to be touring in the Southeast at this time. Like, I don't want to go up to Pendleton, Oregon to play a show. But like, usually what bands will do is they'll just quote you a number that I've heard referred to in some salty words, but it rhymes with a duck you number. Duck you, by the way, being where you, the beat that you cover now.
Yes.
But so like they'll quote you a number where it's just like, you're not going to accept this. Like, come on. This is a ridiculous number. You're not going to accept this. I'm making this offer for you to reject it and for us to be like, okay, nice talking to you. We'll circle back next year. But like, you know, the idea behind that number is like, look, if somebody's going to pay me this much money, I will play your backyard. If you, for the right amount of money, you can get the Eras tour in your backyard. It is a spectacular amount of money. Let me tell you that. It would take a spectacular amount of money. But if you want Eras tour Ryan's backyard, theoretically, that can be done.
And, yeah, our backyard's not big enough, but sure.
Yeah, well, you know, get Taylor will play any venue if you got the right,
for the right price.
And I think that's basically where the Timbers are with Evander, right? If Flamenco, you know, $7.5 million, that's not the duck you number. Like, not even close. If Flamenco walks through the door tomorrow with $13 million, yeah, Ned Grabovoi's not going to slam the door in their face. He'll hear him out. But, like, I think the Timbers number is basically at a point where, similarly, it is very unlikely that anybody's going to meet that valuation. And you get why, right? They just paid $10 million for him last year. He had a so-so year. Certainly not a year that would have enhanced his value. Not a year that would have tanked it, but like, not one that would have been like, oh my gosh, they bought a $20 million player for $10 million. Like, nothing like that.
Yeah, it felt like the transition year that a lot of guys go through when they get to MLS, where they're really good and they show those flashes, but it just takes a year, you know.
And that's exactly the point that the Timbers are thinking about too, because he also didn't have the kind of year where the Timbers are like, we got to cut cord, take what we can get and move on. There are very real reasons to think that Evander might be sort of in line for that year two bump that you just referred to, and that we've seen happen with some frequency around MLS. And if that's the case, the Timbers aren't going to sell him now at what would be the nadir of his value. They're going to benefit from that year two bump and then see if there are offers that come in next year that make more financial sense. So I mean, all of that is a long way of saying, I think there's a 90%+ chance that Evander is in Portland in 2024. I'm not going to say that these are ridiculous rumors or anything like that, because clearly there's something out there. But I mean, if you just sort of stop and think about it for 10 seconds, you kind of see that it's pretty unlikely that the interests are going to get aligned on this deal at this time. So I think the strong likelihood is that he's back next year.
Yeah. And, you know, this is sort of just the territory that we're in now with where MLS is, right? Like major high quality signings, you know, this type of buzz happens with guys all over the league all the time, right? Like Evander, like even though he had a year that may not have lived up to some people's expectations last year, he was unequivocally the team's best player.
I don't know if I would say unequivocally, but he was one of the team's best players. He was unequivocally one of the team's best players. I'll give you that. Okay. Let's not lose our heads, though.
I mean,
Christian Paredes. Solid season.
Paredes was great. Zach McGraw was great. Sure. Yeah. But Evander, in my view, was definitely their best player. And so that this is part of the deal with guys like that, right? Especially, you know, given the Brazilian connections, given, you know, that, you know, he has ambitions to make a jump elsewhere in a couple of years.
And he's clearly like testing his market, deal. Which is like, cool, great. Like that's, I would do the same thing if I was in his circumstances. I would do the same thing basically every offseason. Test my market to see what's out there. So like, there's no like fair play all around. Like there are no hard feelings here, at least that I can see from my perspective. But that also doesn't mean that there's going to be a move.
No, and to say that there is a move imminent is completely false. So let's just say that unequivocally on here. But there's been other rumors too. We may not really get into them in super high detail here. Gabriel Peck is one that they've been connected to out of Brazil. That's very early, very vague. There's not much to talk about there. He sort of fits the profile of the type of, you know, DP that, you know, Ned Grabovoy has been talking about potentially getting. But other than that, there hasn't been anything really concrete so far. So that'll be the thing to keep an eye on, is that young DP or just straight up DP striker that they have talked about
or
wanting to get,
and
or winger. Yeah, and or most, in fact, I believe it's more likely to be a winger than a striker, just given, you know, the roster construction right now. Departures, speaking of strikers, Frank Bolli has left and signed with a team in Mexico, and
Atletico San Luis. What a weird landing place.
Yeah, not what I would have expected. A guy to go from Hungary to MLS to Mexico,
and especially to San Luis in particular. That's like, that's pretty obscure in terms of Liga MX. Like, where are you gonna go next, Juarez? I mean, kind of an obscure landing place. Makes sense. I wouldn't have been shocked if he'd landed with another MLS team. He's sort of an MLS rotation level striker. I'm not sure he's a clear cut starter, but he had some good performances for the Timbers last year. And so, you know, I would have said he would go back to Europe and land in sort of a second tier league in Europe somewhere and probably be perfectly in place. Wouldn't have expected San Luis, but there he is. I will quibble slightly with their announcement tweet. Where they called him Frank the Tank, and they spelled Tank T-A-N-K. T-A-N-C-K was just sitting right there, and that would have been so much funnier.
Yeah, but I mean, what? Come on. Like, I don't know. Then people who don't speak English necessarily wouldn't really know what they were talking about either, because those type of like spelling words wrong jokes, they work for us because we speak the language, but they might not necessarily. I mean, tank is still an English word.
It is, but like, the pun is just funnier. And this is my thing. Like, we have people here who are available if you want to run a pun by us. Like, reach out. Get help. I'm okay with that stuff. Bill Oram is like freaking pun Jedi master.
Yes.
Reach out. Get help.
He's the Qui-Gon Jinn to your Obi-Wan Kenobi when it comes to...
Don't try to, like, pun on your own. Like, there are people who can help.
So there was that. There was Frank leaving for San Luis. And then we had Yimichara depart, the details of which are a little murky in terms of how it worked out. The language was interesting. There wasn't a fee reported, but maybe there was a fee and it was so small that they necessarily didn't want to talk about it. I don't know.
There wasn't a fee. There wasn't a fee. The guy's set to be paid $2 million next year. Junior FC in Colombia is not paying $2 million. they did not assume that contract.
So Yumi is back in Colombia at Junior FC with a team that he can sort of have a fresh start with, right? The transaction was weird, but it's the move that sort of needed to be made, right, to free up that DP spot for the Timbers.
Yep, good move for the Timbers. I mean, doing whatever needed to be done, however you characterize it. I mean, you can call it whatever you want. But good move for the Timbers to get that done, to get that DP spot opened up. Needed to be done. Yeah, that was the first order need in this offseason. Would have liked to have seen that sort of done and sorted out earlier so they could focus all their fire at this point on making the additions. But better late than never, and it's good that they got it done.
For sure. And, you know, it's unfortunate that things didn't work out maybe the way the Timbers had and Yimi had hoped and in his time here. Obviously it was very special to have the Chara brothers on the same team and for them to be out in the community and giving back in the way that they did and to be connected to this soccer community the way they were. Obviously Yimi had some amazing moments, including the bicycle kick and everything else. But numbers wise, like it did not, you know, compute with a DP by any stretch.
And the signing was a mistake on the front end. And not necessarily a mistake to bring him here in general, because, you know, it was nice to have Jimmy and Diego together, and he was a solid player. Lots of good MLS teams would have Jimmy Chara as a starter or a guy who's a frequent contributor. But the bottom line is, outside of Colombia, he had never produced at the level that would have justified the $6 million transfer fee that they paid him and the couple million dollars a year that they were paying him in salary. When he was in Mexico, when he was in Brazil, those numbers just weren't there, at least in league competition. And so that was always a real reach at the numbers that they paid to bring him in. And I think a lot of folks said at the time when they signed him in the 2019-2020 transfer window that it was an overpay, and those people are correct. Quite simple. It's nice when history like lines up with a hot take of yours, subsequent events line up with a hot take of yours at the front end.
Yeah, it makes you sound smarter. So, you know, it's always good when things sort of fall ass backwards into being correct, right?
I think bass backwards, you mean.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said, right? So we'll finish there. That's our cue to exit stage left. For Chris Reifer, I'm Ryan Clark. Thanks for joining us, and thank you for continuing to listen and support this podcast in a way that truly justified us continuing to do it. Right, we have a strong and passionate listener base that you know, they obviously still want the coverage on the larger side, but you know, to have this podcast, I think is a crucial and important thing for this soccer community to have a space to talk about these issues, to react to them and to you know, keep on rolling, right? Like this is a crucial couple of years for these two teams. So I'm happy to still be doing it. Obviously, you know, I'm not going to be around to write these stories in the way that I was before.
Hey,
but
let me tell you, as somebody who made the transition from written word to spoken word, never going to go back, my friend.
Writing is hard, man. It's a pain. It's much easier to just sit here and waffle and talk.
The risks, there's arthritis, there's all kinds of stuff that comes with it. Just let it rip.
For sure. We won't be as active this off season as obviously we will be once the season gets rolling, but we'll catch you in a few weeks. Until then, make sure to like us, subscribe to us wherever you get your pods, follow us on Twitter/X at @SoccerMaidenPDX, at Chris Reifer, and at Ryan T. Clark. Leave a review if you so choose. In fact, if you're feeling friendly today or not, whatever your opinion is, leave us a review to let us know how you're feeling, yeah, because that helps us keep the pod rolling.
That's right. So. And let the muckety mucks know who are, you know, making these decisions. Know that you like having this around, because that certainly helps us keep it around.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.